Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes reporting for duty here on a Monday. It's Monday for Monday delivery. Going to be with you here for the next hour or so as we recap UFC 269 and cover the latest news from the sport of mixed martial arts. But of course, UFC 269 was it, man. That was pretty much what everybody was talking about 36 hours ago on Saturday night. It was kind of the only show going on. Remember, Bellator's already wrapped up. So, yeah, a lot of eyeballs on the final pay-per-view of the year. Of course, UFC has an event going on Saturday, and I'm sure we'll get to that at some point, maybe today, probably on Thursday. But, yes, let's recap this event, man. Two title fights, some historical events took place, some great action between ranked fighters. Knockouts, submissions. It was awesome. It really was. So buckle up, Junkie Nation. We'll be back and we'll start. We're going to hit this thing from top to bottom. All right, Goz. So let's get to it, man. No offense to Julian Robertson and Priscilla Cachoeira, who started the night off. But we're going to go top to bottom here. Charles Oliveira defends his UFC lightweight championship against Dustin Poirier in what was pretty much unfolding, you know, as a classic. They went back and forth for two rounds before this thing stopped early in the third round. Charles Oliveira got a submission. It was a rear naked choke. And but, you know, Dustin Poirier definitely had his moments. What were your thoughts on Oliveira's first title defense?
I thought it was a great first title defense for Charles Oliveira. He beat a guy that's just very, very well-rounded wherever the fight goes. But you could kind of tell early on that Dustin Poirier just did not want anything to do with Oliveira's ground game. And, you know, at one point he just elected to keep closed guard and just kind of hang on for dear life. And I think that those little key pivots, those moves and fights, I think are what give you the walls just start crumbling down. And I think that's what started to happen for Dustin Poirier. I think Charles Oliveira just gained more confidence. And, you know, the guy showed that he was able to do some damage on the feet as well. And then on the ground, that's just where he's best. So, overall, you couldn't have asked for a better performance from Charles Oliveira.
Yeah, he spent the whole round two just basically trying to lock him up from the bottom, close guard, trying to lock him up with his arms so that it could possibly either force a referee stand up or at least melt the clock, you know. And it worked. He got to the stool in between rounds two and three when he did tell his corner, I didn't want, you know, I was trying to protect my back, basically. But Mike Brown was telling him, you got to get up, you know. At some point, you got to figure a 10-8 was in play because he was down there for so long. You know, he ate some elbows. Not the most vicious type where, you know, blood spewing everywhere. But still, there was some elbows and forearms that were landing. And some ground and pound. But it looked like domination. Remember, it's duration, domination, damage. If two of those three are present, you should look to consider a 10-8 round. A lot of people think that it is a 10-8 round. No, I've looked at the rules and it says you should look to consider a 10-8 round, which kind of almost means, bitch, you better write down a 10-9, you know. But the rules of MMA are kind of egg in that department. In the first round, they kept wrapping each other behind the collar, almost like hockey goons. It's called like a collar tie or half of a Muay Thai plum, which Oliveira kind of was doing that as well, but they were just grabbing the back of each other's neck and trying to punch each other. It was interesting. Like I say, the fight kind of took place all over. The calf kick, I thought, was going to be present a little bit more throughout the night. It really wasn't. But still, it was a really, really unique card. This was the main event. Albeit, in a way, it may have been anticlimactic to what we're going to talk about in just a second. But still, two top 55ers went at it. And, you know, Oliveira came through. You know, once he got on top of him, he took his back and he had his hooks in. A lot of times by round three, you know, one of the fighters can slip down. You know, if he's too high and slip off. And the guy that's kind of crouched over, sometimes he'll fall down and force the fight to, I guess, continue on the ground. And if the guy can hold on, then he holds on. But he was basically in a backpack position. He couldn't shake him. And I was kind of surprised that he didn't have, like, a last-minute attempt of this or that just to kind of, like I say, I don't know, like a last-gasp attempt that I've seen other fighters do. And Poirier's a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt. I still wonder, going back to round two, he was really, really that uncomfortable with him taking his back. Boy, that's something that, I mean, this is the guy, goes, that leads the UFC in submission wins. Like,
mm-hmm.
You know, by the time a lot of fighters were fighting Damian Maia, and granted, it was an older Damian Maia, there was a lot of guys that weren't necessarily, they were cautious, but they trained hard for Damian Maia. And then towards the end, a lot of times, they weren't as scared to even engage him on the ground, you know. Whereas between what Poirier told his coach and between what I saw, it looks like he definitely still needs a little bit more seasoning if he were to get a second shot down the road.
Yeah, I mean, that was, I think, a little bit surprising for me. You want to look at something like that at Dustin Poirier and maybe say he had an off night, but I don't think that was the case. I think Charles Oliveira is just that good. I think his game is that threatening. And I don't know that it didn't leave you. And it's kind of like he's starting to do things that Habib would do. When Habib would finish with someone, he didn't really give you that. He didn't leave you wanting a rematch where you go, well, if this just got tweaked, like, he would just run through people. You know, like, Michael Chandler had his moment, but I think at the end, Oliveira just defined everything. I don't really need to see that anytime soon. I don't really need to see a Dustin Poirier matchup rematch anytime soon. I want a fresh matchup, somebody that brings a different skill set, right? Charles Oliveira can really put something together here with a couple fights. I think people just have to stop sleeping on him.
For sure. And now that's the second time Poirier in a title fight, in an undisputed title fight, has been choked out via rear naked choke. That's how Habib got him too. So if he gets back to this, you know, and it's Oliveira, I got to imagine that's just something he really, really has to take a look at. Because to say that to his coaches in between rounds, I mean, you're giving up a whole round and possibly putting yourself in a position to get 10-8ed. You'd rather get someone dropping elbows on you like that? I mean, I don't know, man. That could have been even uglier going into round three. Now, his hands, the same way he got his hands to be as beautiful as they are, and, you know, I would say that submission defense definitely does need to be tightened up if you're to the point where you don't feel comfortable enough that you don't want to, you know, risk opening up your guard and creating scrambles or kicking them off, sweeps, attacking, I don't know. That's gonna be what it takes. Islam Makhachev, you know, he's pretty well versed on the ground. If he's coming around, if it's not gonna be Oliveira, it might be him. It's not always gonna be a Chandler or a Gaethje standing across from you who just wants to throw bombs, you know. And now look at Oliveira. He can submit you or he can knock you out. He's rounded out his game. He's pretty amazing, man. Congrats to Charles Oliveira. Charles Oliveira, I think, is now on 9 straight, and he's starting to create a little hit list. Now, granted, I looked at the list, you know, who he had. And you can honestly do this with Habib, too, from the time Habib was in the UFC until the time he exited. You know, obviously the names got better and better and better, but after all Oliveira's been through, because trust me, this guy's going to challenge the record books a lot because he's been in the UFC for a long time. He's done lightweight, featherweight, back to lightweight. But in his streak, he's got Clay Guida, respect. Christos Giagos, all right, tough guy, but not as big of a name. Jim Miller, kind of in that same realm as Guida, maybe a little bit of a further step. I think he's been probably the same. David Timor, tough guy. Nick Lentz, tough guy. Jared Gordon, tough guy. And then you get to Kevin Lee, who at one point challenged for the UFC lightweight title, the interim. So that was a nice win. He submitted Kevin Lee. Tony Ferguson, who was the UFC interim lightweight champ. He defeated Kevin Lee to get that. Took great win there. Michael Chandler and now Dustin Poirier. And guess what? Three of those four were finished. Only Ferguson wasn't. Ferguson was quick to note that on Twitter. These guys, man. Chandler, Ferguson, these guys. I think today, Conor McGregor, you know, he's wondering when he's going to fight Oliveira. Chandler saying he's, you know, giving Poirier a tough time about quitting. And saying, hey, look, I was in the fight of the year last year against Gaethje. So, Gaethje, go fight this guy. And then I got winner sometime in December. You know, that might work out. But Chandler will have to fight somebody mm-hmm. before December. You can't just sit till December and wait for the winner. Because you got Islam Makhachev and Benny Dariush. And the winner is going to have maybe every right to go, I got next. To the winner of Gaethje and Oliveira. And plus, let's not forget to RDA. RDA is a former champion, so he's always going to get some sort of a push. He's getting up there in age, but still, he's always going to get some sort of a push, especially if he goes in there and does something big, dramatic. You never know. So stay active and stay ready is what I would tell all these guys. I would get on the Gaethje Oliveira card against somebody tough. And that way, if something falls apart, you're there. And just make sure that your opponent's not more credentialed than you are, that they go to the opponent first and then you. That would be my strategy. Stay ready and be near that card or on that card. Go ahead.
I can't believe that Conor McGregor is the guy that would probably have to tap Michael Chandler on the shoulder and go, hey, take it easy. You're getting a little crazy here with some of your requests. That just can't happen. You know, it can't happen right now. He needs a win. But because of the type of fights that he's put on, the type of person he is, probably one big win and a combination of right time, right place could probably get him there. It's not a lot, but come on, off of two losses, that ain't gonna happen.
Dana White, his eyeballs have those money signs on them. So if you're one of those guys, and did you notice he's starting to kind of get that little goo goo gaga for Sean O'Malley?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because Sean O'Malley's popping. I get it, man. I see our traffic as well. I see the way the crowd responds. So at some point, you know, you got to get this guy stop potty training, you know, and get him out there. I don't mean that as a disrespect to his opponent. I just mean in terms of you got to get him up there against a contender because everyone in the UFC, fairly, for the most part in the history of I've been covering the UFC, if you're in the UFC, you're pretty tough. You know, it doesn't mean you're one of the top 10, because remember all these divisions, man, some of them can go like 100 deep. So if you're like the 80th best guy, all right, good for you, you know, but you still haven't proved to us that by beating the 80th best guy, you have what it takes to be a champion. So with O'Malley, we got to see you against these top 10 guys. And we haven't yet. I'm sure Holly and Paiva will do good if he continues as a bantamweight, probably even better. As a flyweight, because as a flyweight, there's just less of them. Bantamweight's deep, but we got to see him against somebody tough. And, of course, they asked him that. Well, no, I'm skipping ahead. Let's get to Amanda Nunes. So, yeah, Charles Oliveira gets his first title defense. That's 9 in a row, I think I said. Let me see, what's that, 4? Yeah, 9 in a row for Charles Oliveira. Good for him. And let me see here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 9. And holy shit. Goes, he's won 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 10 in a row for Charles Oliveira in one of the most deepest, most challenging, difficult weight classes there is.
And a good finish ratio, too.
And a good finish ratio, yep. In the co-main event, Juliana Pena defeated Amanda Nunes. So let's just say you've been fishing in Alaska, or you just got back from camping all weekend and everything was unplugged and you happen to be catching this on your way home, I'm not bullshitting you, folks. Juliana Pena defeated Amanda Nunes. She submitted her with a rear naked choke in round two with 3 minutes and 26 seconds into it. So a little bit past the first round. Now, how did she get there? By outstriking Amanda Nunes. Amanda Nunes put her down a couple times in the first round, controlled her from top position, and it just looked like she was playing with her little daughter, Regan, at times, and it was just going to be a matter of time before she basically blasted Juliana Pena, kind of how at least I predicted the fight would go, and many I know predicted. Sure, you got a lot of people on Twitter and Facebook. I called it. I don't know that I heard it from too many people with like a clear, I need one of two things, either you on paper or me hearing your podcast and you talking about these are the paths to victory, or show me a ticket where you at least put 100 and then I'll say, yeah, I believe you, because you can say it, right? Or you can put 5 to win 50. I get that, but there just seemed to be a lot of Monday morning quarterbacks and a lot of experts out there that called this prediction. God bless you if you did, all right? I just did not think it could go this way. And I'm still not convinced that if they were to fight a second time that it would go Juliana Pena's way. I don't know. But we'll see. And it looks like an immediate rematch is something that the UFC is definitely open to. But Juliana Pena went out there, and she traded with Amanda Nunes. She took some shots. Like I said, she got put down. But she traded, and she started to stifle Amanda Nunes. Every time Amanda wanted to get them hands going and put them on her, Juliana was throwing a timely jab that would back her off or throw her off. And then she was throwing a nice 1-2, and these punches were landing. And, you know, eventually the fight got to the ground with a nice takedown. And then that top position where she just basically owned Amanda Nunes. And Amanda Nunes, I don't even know if she choked to the – if she tapped to a choke that was even underneath her chin, it all happened so quick. I couldn't believe what was honestly taking place. But, you know, at this point, all you can do is hail the champ, man. She got it done. It was amazing. I still can't believe I'm saying this, what I said.
Yeah, you can't take anything away from Juliana Pena. I mean, that's just the situation. But anybody who's ever watched these two fighters fight before can probably see that that just wasn't Amanda Nunes out there. You know, what was it, Marvin Hagler that said it's hard to wake up and train when you're wearing silk pajamas? I think we might have come across, that scenario here. Early on, if you watch the fight, Amanda was coming forward. She was hitting her with good shots, but Juliana wasn't going away. And Juliana did trade with her, and it didn't really go her way early on. But she gained more confidence and started stepping into her punches, and she was backing Amanda down. And it looked like she was hitting Amanda with punches, but they weren't necessarily hurting Amanda. I just think she's just never been bullied like that, you know? And the cardio just definitely was not there. It's strange because if you look at her, she looked like she was in good shape.
Mm-hmm.
But she just started to break little by little. And you could tell, like, that's the odd thing, is Juliana's choke just wasn't there. It wasn't even really on the chin where you could say she's crushing that. You know, it's the pressure. It was like more on her mouth. It was the strangest thing. And even when the fight was over, I think Juliana was like a little confused. And I think she figured out, yeah, I'm the winner. But she was probably thinking like, what happened? Was it an injury or what? Because that choke didn't look anywhere near being in, and Amanda didn't look anywhere near fighting it off or anything. You know, it was
Juliana didn't even know she tapped. I think what she thought was, I listened to the post-fight conference, and she was wondering about the clock and how much time there was left that she was going for that choke. But I think she thought it was the end of the round.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a really, really strange performance from Amanda Nunes. Now, you want to hope, we've heard before that Amanda Nunes was probably closer to the end of her career. But you wanna hope that this lit a fire under her and she wants to go and get that belt back, because she sure wasn't really making it sound that way. You know, when they were interviewing her, props to Juliana Pena, and she was a tough fighter, all that. but she didn't really have that little gangster streak that we've seen from champions that have lost their belt, that hunger. So we'll see. We'll see where she goes back. I mean, she's a mother now. Maybe that's changed her a little bit. But I have to imagine that she's going to want to get this one back. But props to Juliana Pena. But I also feel like a lot of fighters may have been able to get a win that night, especially Valentina Shevchenko over that Amanda Nunes. So we'll have to see. She's going to have to tighten the screws up a little bit.
Yeah, that's a good point. Valentina's striking is definitely better than Juliana. Now, one thing she may not have that Juliana did appear to have was a height and reach that was close to matching Amanda, and therefore that punch could get there. You know what I mean? It could get there and stop Amanda. And every time Amanda got hit, you could see her frustrated because she was like, oh, yeah? What's up? Here it comes. Boom. Oh, yeah? What's up? Here it comes. Boom. Oh, yeah? No, watch. Boom. You know, and so I credit Juliana Pena for that. That was nice. And to be in that little phone booth with that monster, holy cow, like that takes a lot of bravado, a lot of precision. And, you know, you have to be calm, obviously, as well, to keep your eyes open and see what's coming at you. Make sure you can hit the target so that you can execute that. And then eventually, obviously, on the ground, getting her there and testing her there, that was great. And doing it at that pace that they were keeping. I'm still shocked because Amanda has had those problems in the past where she can gas, but I just hadn't seen them in those fights where she's going the whole 25 minutes. She kind of knows how to like balance it. So maybe it was the fact that she blitzed, that was just something that she wasn't able to recover from. Or it could be that maybe the camps just aren't as tight as they have been in the past. Who knows? But that's stuff where we're now speculating because, like Ghost said, when she weighed in, she looked as good as I've seen her. Mm-hmm. You know, she had the abs going. She just looked lean. She didn't look like sunken. She didn't look troubled. It looked like someone who was well prepared to fight at 135 pounds. Now, granted, her last two were at 145 pounds, but this one was at 135 pounds, but it looked like she, you know, that part was fine. She even came in at 134.5.
But yeah, it was odd, dude. It really, really was odd.
She lost and she wasn't pissed. Juliana won and she wasn't happy. That's why you're watching it all going, well, what did happen? Did they stop the fight? Is somebody's glove, you know, need to be taped? Like it had this motion of just like, what is happening?
Mm-hmm. That team always has their fighters prepared. So strategy-wise, I can't blame them. It really all came down to execution. And her head was just not in the game Saturday night. Her head was not in the game. And you got to give Juliana Pena some props too, because she did what a lot of fighters don't do, and that she came forward and she was willing to take shots, to give some of her own, and it paid off. She bullied the bully.
Yeah. A couple of notes. Have you seen that highlight of Michael Chiesa and Misha Tate rooting on their teammate? Uh-huh. Chiesa jumps over the fence. I heard he may have gotten hurt, and it was an awkward landing. And then he kind of has that little kind of a funny strut as he looks like our dad, maybe jogging to get the newspaper. Mm-hmm. But he's kind of drifting off. And I think what he wants to do is get into the octagon. And that's fine. I've seen others do that. Gabriel Checo was in the octagon, you know, with Charles Oliveira. But there's a procedure where they let commission officials, and then they might let one coach and then a few coaches, and then you can take a picture with your damn family if you want, family and friends. But I think he wanted to either jump over the top or just get in. Heard he might have had a few drinks, and that's fine too. Not hating on that. But because he went about it the wrong way, he was going to be asked to almost leave the arena. Now, that said, I saw some footage in the back where he's just crying and passionately hugging her. Just so proud of his friend and teammate. So that was cool. Looks like it ended well. I'm a Chiesa fan. I like the guy. But in case you're wondering, that's the stuff that I was uncovering, or at least looking into late last night. I was trying to figure out what was happening here. So he either must have been left back into the arena and everything, you know, all's well or whatever. But it was an emotional scene because that same little video covers Misha Tate screaming her head off. Remember, Misha Tate was her coach on The Ultimate Fighter. They're friends back from when they all used to train at the state of Washington. Apparently, they started right about the same time did Chiesa and Pena. So they've been going at this for about a decade or so with that same team in Spokane. And then you also see Andre Arlovsky and Kayla Harrison pissed off, disappointed, you know, because things didn't go their way. And in fact, goes, you know, ATT went 0-4. They picked up a trophy on Friday night at the World MMA Awards for Gym of the Year. And congrats to them. They've done it. They've done that quite a few times now. They may be on their fifth award. They got a lot of killers and a lot of champions and a lot of great fighters. But that night definitely wasn't their night. Dustin Poirier lost. Amanda Nunes lost. Pedro Munhoz lost. And one other guy. It'll hit me in just a second. I even thought Jillian Robertson was still a part of the team, but she's not, even though she was with Dean Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
And Dean Thomas has been a long time.
Oh, George just somehow took himself out of there. But yeah, just it's an unfortunate night for American Top Team, but they'll bounce back from something like that. You know, they definitely have the horses and good trainers. Hi.
Sorry about that. Yeah. I clicked the wrong button, and I wanted to make sure. You know, when something bugs me, it just nips at me until I know the answer. So mm-hmm. The other person goes that took a loss for that gym was Santiago Ponzinibbio. So these are all big-name fighters. And mm-hmm. usually ATT does not go 0-4. But those are the four that lost. So it was a rough night. But and then I just can't skip it, man. I can't skip it. I know I'm going to sound terrible right now, but it was said. And I'm wondering how everyone's reacting to it. I'm surprised it's not bigger news, but I noticed Adam Hill from the Las Vegas Review Journal here in Vegas. I didn't even know that it happened until the day after, but Pena kind of took a little bit of a little swipe. It doesn't look like she intended to hurt Amanda, but it almost seems like it comes from an ignorant place where they were talking about the uniqueness of that matchup, you know, mom versus mom in a title fight, first time ever. And somehow she wanted to clarify that she feels like she's the first mom champion in the UFC because she actually gave birth to her daughter. I believe her daughter's name is Issa. And she wasn't asked a scientific question like that. She was just asked the question about a mom fighting another mom for the title. And so, therefore, we know that obviously at this point in time, Amanda has fought with her daughter, Regan, in her corner, we'll say, or in the audience. I think this is her third fight. So that's been established that a mom's been in a title fight, except Juliana Pena, I guess, wanted to point out the part that she birthed her daughter and Amanda Nunes did not. As you all know, Amanda Nunes is married to her wife, Nina Nunes, formerly Nina Ansaroff. Nina Ansaroff carried the baby, but boy, that technicality, ooh, man, to me, that was uncalled for.
Yeah, very uncalled for. I mean, come on. It's not like it's an actual title, right? I mean, I just don't understand a scenario where you would do that. It's so weird to have a week where two fighters just completely put their foot in their mouths, you know, with Dominic Cruz and then Juliana Pena on the one of the biggest stages after accomplishing such a great feat to say something so dumb. God, that was just a terrible, terrible, terrible thing to say. And something that who the hell's going to high five you after that? You know what I mean?
I've consulted enough people to know that I'm not just, you know, some crazy liberal over here looking to nitpick. A lot of people that I consulted were telling me, yeah, that was bad. Because, look, I could see me and you being at the Mandalay Bay and having Juliana Pena as our guest, co-hosting for a couple hours, all right, we'll say, or 30 minutes. I don't know, whatever. And I could see the question coming up saying, Juliana, you were a terrific fighter who won the Ultimate Fighter. had your run, but then you took some time off to be a mom. What has it been like to do training camps post, you know, child, you know, bearing a child? I would ask Misha Tate the same question, you know, like, what's it like, your body? Like, are these camps tougher? Are they easier? Because arguably, Misha Tate is like even more leaner than I remember her now than she was in her other fights. Like, so how did your body change hormonally or your drive, whatever? I could see that being a line of questioning if you were talking to someone in an extended interview process. And then they could share what it was like, you know, physically for them before they were mom and after mom. And that would be fair and that would be interesting. But at that point in time, to nitpick and kind of point that out, oof. You know, I see a lot of people coming to their defense and just saying, hey, man, it was really not that big of a deal. But I feel like it was a big deal. And I guess that's just it. And if you don't get it, you don't get it. And that's fine. But I don't know. I just think it was. There you go. Because see, what happens is in explaining myself, I'm going to take another 3 minutes away from talking about either just, again, how great Juliana Pena did on Saturday night, the odds and other things I want to get to. But you have any final thoughts on that topic?
Again, you know, everybody's entitled to their opinion, but you have to know that your opinion is going to have repercussions. And that just seemed like the type of thing where you're just not going to gain anything from saying it. So you're better off just not saying it. And I'm shocked that she said it.
Mm-hmm, me too. All right. So Pena was anywhere from like plus 550, plus 600, plus 700. I don't think that I saw anything plus higher than 700. Maybe a 750 out there. So if somebody put $100 on her, they won 750. Amanda was anywhere from like minus 900 all the way to 1200, I think is what I saw. Who knows if at the very end it even went higher. DraftKings posted something about somebody may have dropped $300K on Amanda Nunes. So it would have been, let me see, 300 to win at 1200 to one. I'll do the math in just a second. But some people lost some big money, especially, I mean, that was a parlay buster. And a lot of people thought they might just be scooping up an easy hundy by putting $1,000 on Amanda. I'll put $1,000 on the way into the arena. Then we'll come back out and pick up $100. We got $100 for drinks and a snack because Vegas is expensive. Well, guess what? You ain't picking up that $100 or that $1,000 that you dropped off. It wasn't an easy time. That was it. Others that wanted a chance, Juliana Pena, go for it. I was telling them, just don't do much because Amanda just doesn't seem to lose, and it doesn't seem like Juliana's bringing anything that can threaten her. I was wrong, obviously, but that's what people were picking up. If they put $100, $550, $650, $750, somewhere along the lines. What I'm getting at is this the biggest upset ever? I remember Matt Serra got as high as was in that neighborhood as far as the odds. But let's put the odds to the side for just a sec. Just was it the biggest upset in terms of the stature of the champ versus the stature of the challenger?
Yeah. For me, it was, because when you look at GSP and Matt Serra, at least when you were breaking that down, you would say, okay, if Matt Serra can somehow get this fight to the ground, he's got a shot there, right? In this fight, I think people said, well, the best thing Juliana Pena could do is maybe get the fight to the ground. But even if she does, she's going up against another Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt. Like, she's got to pray that she's able to do something here. They're just, honestly, man, there were no paths to victory in my mind for her to win this fight. And especially just Amanda firing on all cylinders. I just didn't see a way. Like, this one really, really shocked me.
I'm going to go with, I think Serra was a bigger upset. And I think because in my mind, you had a guy who, A, was a lightweight most of his career. B, fizzled out of the UFC. Well, nah, that's not fair. I guess part of it was because the lightweights went away. But at one point, he just was no longer a member of the UFC. And then he came back through that what was called the comeback season. And the comeback season stipulated whoever wins gets a straight shot to the title. So I just look at it as someone who wasn't in the UFC, who competed at a weight class lower, and came in and beat what's now known as the GOAT. Now, at that time, we didn't know he was going to be a GOAT, but GSP was pretty great at the time. And whereas Juliana Pena earned her shot, has the record to back it up, was also an Ultimate Fighter winner, but not on a comeback season because her career hadn't gone away for no reason. So I think just by a hair, Sarah was the greater upset. In terms of odds, it all depends because there's so many houses now, and it depends on when you got the fight early on, when it was minus 900 or later when it was 1,200. Who knows? But I just think, like I say, it's Sarah being the greater upset still by a hair. Both were great upsets, but they're in that fine company. You know, they're together, lumped together in that fine company. That's how big that was. I think because the sport's more popular now, because Amanda not only had that great run where she's only lost one time to Kat Zingano, somebody who Juliana Pena defeated, by the way. GSP, I think, was still creating his big run, you know? And so that's why I think you saw Andre Arlovsky and Kayla Harrison just in disbelief. Misha Tate, like, losing her voice, emotional, because it was tremendous. Even Aljamain Sterling, they kept showing him, and he was like, what did I just witness? It was nuts, man. It really was. That's why we talked about Oliveira Poirier. Like, I almost feel like we should have started with Amanda Nunes and Juliana Pena. I couldn't wait to get to it. But yeah, Poirier and Oliveira luckily delivered a good fight, but it still had it had this feeling like it was a little bit anticlimactic. Like, people were still processing the Lioness losing the fight before.
Right. Yeah, no, I can agree with that. But yeah, just as far as like 1-2 punches, those last two fights at the end, man, that really just tipped off a super long card. But overall, I thought it was worth the money you spend for a pay-per-view.
Oh, hell yeah, man. Look, the only fight that slowed things down just a little bit, I was expecting a little bit more from it, was Jeff Neal and Santiago Ponzinibbio. That was the featured bout. It was the third fight on the card. It went to a split decision, and look, they had times where they were moving, punching, kicking at a great pace, and I really thought that they were going to have, you know, a nice finish. But basically, at the, you know, it was a high-paced, very tactical kickboxing sparring match for the most part, you know what I mean? And in the end, Jeff Neal got the job done. But we ended the night with two submissions, the historical submission over Amanda Nunes and then Chucky Olives doing his thing. And then right before that, we had two vicious KOs. But this was the only fight that really slowed things down in terms of a decision. But congrats to Jeff Neal to do that after how long has it been since Thanksgiving? 2 weeks, kind of, maybe 2.5 weeks, where on Thanksgiving night, this guy was arrested for a DWI and having possession of a loaded handgun. And think about how that could be maybe not a career ender, but at least a career stopper. He didn't hurt anybody. But, you know, he's going to have to go through that process, you know, of maybe getting his license suspended. I don't know, because I haven't looked into his case. But still, that's something where that could have been ugly. Like, if I tell you, hey, did you hear Jeff Neal got arrested? DWI, gun in the glove compartment. You'd probably be like, yeah. Hey, like, now what? Like, did he hit somebody or did he shoot somebody? And like, what, you're expecting for there to be more, and hopefully there isn't. But he stuck with it. He finished his training camp, and he just got this huge win, and that money's going to go a long way for him, his win bonus, you know, and getting past Ponzinibbio so that his career doesn't suffer. Now he's got to address the personal.
Yeah, it wasn't a pretty win, but he got it. But yeah, that did kind of slow things down a little bit on that card.
Yep, because right before that, folks, Kai Kara-France put it on Cody Garbrandt. He knocked him out 3 minutes and 21 seconds into the first round. Goes, what a beautiful KO. And it was at the expense of Cody Garbrandt, who I really enjoy watching him compete. I don't want him to take these KOs because I don't mind when fighters lose, honestly, even if I kind of like who they are or or just maybe bet on him or whatever. I just don't like fighters to constantly get knocked out, because then I want them to almost consider exiting the sport, especially if they made themselves enough money. And that's sad, because a lot of them still have more to give. They want to compete. But these KOs, you know, you're just like, oof, they hurt you. So you know they hurt them, and it hurts them. It hurts their family and their friends, their teammates. They're all having this horrible feeling, you know, like, oh, man, what's next for Cody? What do we do? What do we tell him? Mm-hmm. But that was a vicious KO, man.
That was brutal. I really like Cody Garbrandt as a person. I enjoy his fighting style. He's had some pretty bad luck, though. It's unfortunate, because his style is appealing for the fans, but boy, does it leave you open for these types of attacks. And I think a real calculated fighter like a Kai Kara France can just sit back and be patient and pick that right spot. Cody Garbrandt, you know, unfortunately, like, I think looking forward, you got to rest him again. But he just hasn't fought that much. Going into the fight, he looked great. Like, I expected him to look a little sucked in. I mean, he looked great on the scale. I think this is where he belongs. So it sucks, after making all these adjustments, to have that happen to him. But yeah, it's a difficult situation for him. The guy needs a win. And I think he's going to have to change up his fight style a little bit. Maybe work on that ground game, because I think he's just too aggressive.
He just turned 30. That's not old in MMA. And further to that, he's lost 5 of 6 since that beautiful performance against Dominic Cruz. Do you remember when he owned Dominic Cruz for a night of fighting at UFC 207?
Yeah.
It was about 5 years ago in Las Vegas. He went to 11-0, beat Dominic Cruz. He was popping goes at times, you know, doing he was dancing. He was making a miss. I mean, he was clowning on Cruz. And Cruz is tough to clown on because, A, he's just tough to beat. B, when he does, you ain't got time to be popping and making faces and things like that. You know, you got to be on your toes because you're fighting Dominic Cruz. But he made it look so easy. I just thought, man, this cat's going to be in this for a long time. He's a state wrestling champion. He's difficult to take down. But he's also got really, really nice hands, golden gloves. You know, that's a tough combo. And he's got that fighter gene, you know, where he just seems to be fearless. This guy's going to be around. But since then, he lost to TJ Dillashaw twice, both vicious KOs. Pedro Munhoz, vicious KO. Then he viciously KOs Rafael Asuncao. Now, between the Munhoz KO and the Asuncao KO, he took about a year and a half off. And so he comes back, KOs Rafael Asuncao. All right, he's back. Then he comes back and fights Rob Font. Didn't get KO'd, luckily, but he lost the decision. And then he thought, you know what? Let me try this thing at 125, which I've teased before, because I've lost four of my last five in the bantamweight division. I'm nowhere near trying to get my title back. Let's give it a shot. And like Ghost said, he looked good at the weigh-ins. He looked good during fight week. I'm almost thinking, Ghost, as great as Embedded is, when you look back, Embedded, man, like, tees up the fighter that loses for, like, an even harder fall because of all the things you're on record to saying, you know, like, they usually show you with your nutritionist, and look, I'm eating. This guy's great, you know, or she's great. I've been eating. The weight's just coming off. I'm going to go in there. I haven't lost my speed, my power. I'm going to look good, baby. Just watch on Saturday. And then they get up close. When they're doing the face-offs, you asked for this, he's telling Kai Kara France, you know. Now he's got to basically eat all that. You know, they say eat your words. That's got to make it even tougher that all this is documented so that when you lose, it's just everywhere. You know, the replays are everywhere. Now, granted, when they win, it's a big payoff. But still, man. So now we got to deal with, another KO at age 30. Oof. He's got time. But, yeah, I'd like to see him take some time off, man. Maybe it's going to take a year. I don't know.
Yeah, that's just not a good scenario for him to get right back in there. And unfortunately, it's going to be what he wants to do, right? He wants to shake all this off. He's going to be looking for answers. But I definitely think stylistically he needs to start changing things because He may be young, but he's taken some damage in these fights, and you don't want to see that.
Agreed. All right, so Kai Car France. I mean, we spoke more about Cody Garbrandt, but Kai Car France is saying, give me the champ next. Look, we just talked to Kai Car France. Likeable guy. I'm a fan of his, but he's not next. You still have Alexander Pantoja. Excuse me. And Askar Askarov to contend with. And until Moreno and Figueiredo fight and those others fight, he's got to hope Brandon Royval doesn't get on this fast little two-fight win streak or anything like that, because he's also got that loss straight up to Brandon Royval. But that said, Royval has lost since then, since he defeated Kai Car France. So maybe it's not as big of a deal, you know, as long as Royval just doesn't get on some sort of a streak. But, you know, he lost to Brandon Royval two fights ago before beating Cody Garbrandt and Rogerio Bontorin. So his other loss before that was Brandon Moreno, but he's the champ. No problem there. Now, Brandon Royval, after he beat Kai Car France, lost to Brandon Moreno. No problems there. And Alexander Pantoja. I got a little bit of a problem there. That's what makes Alexander Pantoja ahead of Brandon Royval and Kai Car France. So, but before that, he had won, you know, he had beaten Tim Elliott and Kai Car France, did Brandon Royval. So we'll see. He hasn't fought since August of 2021. So as of right now, there's no problems. But Kai Car France is going to have to take a fight. And that's why when he was asked at the press conference, Dana White, you know, hey, what do you think of Kai Car France saying that? He said that. And he goes, okay. But I think he knew in the top of his head, man, I don't have these rankings in front of me, but I know that Kai Car France is going to have to take another fight before fighting for a title.
Yeah, I can't hate him for putting that out in the universe. The guy had a lot of confidence when we spoke to him. It's like he kind of knew in watching video and preparation that there were going to be openings, and he exploited them. You know, when he had the opportunity, he struck. And everything he did about that performance on a big pay-per-view like that, it's going to help him out tremendously. So that next fight's big, right? He's got to take one more fight, I think. And if he can obliterate his opponent the way he just did, yeah, I think he could. He could jump people.
He's going to have to fight the guy that gets left out of fighting the winner, Figueiredo and Moreno. So that's going to be either Askarov or Pantoja. I think he should take on that guy, whoever it is. And Royval doesn't volunteer to take one of those two on.
Right. Yeah.
I don't think he would fight Pantoja back-to-back, but if he fights Askarov, that would be a big win for him. Another thing I would do if I was Kai Car France is fight someone on the same card as Figueiredo and Moreno. The only problem with that is that's only a month away. So that might be tough to do a quick turnaround like that. But if he wanted to stay in the States and say, I'm just going to be ready, or I'm the backup, or who knows, maybe they already have a backup, I don't know, or I just want to be on that card, then being in the right place at the right time, yes, you can get that title fight. If he's on the same fight card as Moreno and Figueiredo, and Figueiredo's having a weight problem, they would turn to Kai Car France, I promise you. Unless his opponent, again, was Pantoja or Askarov. But if it's just some other guy, then they could turn to him. So stay ready, be ready, be a team player, yes. But he's just not next. I'm not trying to hate on Chandler. I'm not trying to hate on Kai Car France. I'm just looking at the landscape, and there's others that are looking for that same chance you were given. Mm-hmm. And you know, they've earned it. So there you go. Sean O'Malley in the opening bout of UFC 269. He defeated Holyan Paiva in the first round, 4 minutes and 42 seconds into it. And that was a vicious KO as well.
Yeah. I'm almost starting to feel guilty, George, as an MMA fan, watching some of these fighters put everything out on the line. And your biggest failure, your biggest embarrassment is in front of so many people. And that's just your ego that's getting bruised. How about your body and the trauma? Very difficult, but man, what a knockout, right?
Yeah. And Paiva and Garbrandt going back to back. They're part of the Team Alpha Male. That one just got to hurt for the team, because both of their guys went out there and got polished off. Granted, Josh Emmett took a win for the team as he defeated Dan Ige. But just like as bad of a night as it could have been for ATT, or it was for ATT, it could have been that way for Team Alpha Male if they had gone 0-3, because that's three big guns that they have. But yeah, man, that KO was vicious. Paiva came up from 125 pounds recently to become a bantamweight, says he wants to stay there. I don't know, man. He looked, man, O'Malley, he's tall. He looks like a handful. He, you know, you got problems if you're fighting O'Malley. The only problem is I'd like to be able to say that after O'Malley beats a top 10 guy, and he hasn't done that yet. And, you know, Cody Garbrandt is a good guy to pivot back to when explaining why I feel the way I do about Sean O'Malley. So Sean O'Malley now is 15-1. His last three wins are Holyan Paiva, Chris Moutinho, Thomas Almeida. He's looked great against all of them. Three fights in 21. Great year. Three bonuses as well. The guy's popping, even the UFC saying they're going to have to pay him. He did lose to Marlon Vera before that three-fight win streak. And then he beat Eddie Wineland, Jose Alberto Quinones, Andre Sukunta. So 6-1 or 7-1 he is since Dana White Contender Series is when he debuted. Now look at Cody Garbrandt goes. Cody Garbrandt came into the UFC and he beat Marcus Brimage, then Henry Briones, then Augusto Mendez. Doesn't that sound kind of like almost Tarion Ware, Andre Sukumta, Jose Alberto Quinones?
Mm-hmm.
Very similar, right? Yeah. And then Cody Garbrandt takes on Thomas Almeida and Sean O'Malley takes on Eddie Wineland. All right. Thomas Almeida is probably fighting at a higher level because remember, Eddie Wineland's best days were when he was the WEC champ, the original WEC champ way back when. But still, at that point, again, we'll almost say it's a dead heat. You know, we'd have to really, really split the hair to see, you know, or split the atom, I should say, to see, you know, well, who's really ahead. But then in their next fight, Cody Garbrandt fights Takeya Mizugaki. Sean O'Malley fights Marlon Vera and loses. But if we put the Vera fight to the side, his next fight is Thomas Almeida, who Cody Garbrandt has already beaten, except Cody Garbrandt, if I'm not mistaken, was the one that hung his first L on him. Remember, Almeida started off like 20-0 in his career or something like that. And then Cody Garbrandt fights Dominic Cruz for the title, whereas Sean O'Malley has now gone on to Chris Moutinho and then Holyan Paiva. You see what I'm saying? That's the frustration from hardcore MMA fans that have watched the sport and seen a fighter progress and eventually fight for the title. Are you for real or not, kid? We believe you. You know, you got the skills. You've kind of proved it against anyone from 15 to number 30. But what about number 12? What about number 8? What about number 5? What about number 2? Like, enough already.
Well, we're all going to riot if that next fight. It better be a good name. We got to test this kid. We got to figure out where he's at. I mean, I think it's safe to say he's a good fighter. Is he great? Okay. Right? Is he great? Is he top 5? He can have a good career and stick around, win-loss. You can do that. But the way he's talking, you're thinking that he believes he's elite. And we can't prove that based off of who he's fought. So if anything, hell, there's been times where I think a lot of us have seen a few holes that maybe a more skilled fighter can exploit. So let's see. Let's put him up there. Now, here's the thing. If you give him a Rob Font, someone like that, I wouldn't be shocked if he beat Rob Font. This kid's a good fight. Sean O'Malley's a decent fighter. But we need to see that. We need to see these top names. And, yeah, Dana White, pay him. Pay him his money. I think he's earned it.
I agree. And I'll tell you this much. I'm actually starting to like Sean O'Malley. If you listen to him for like 20 minutes, he may say one douchey thing. Maybe two, I guess, if he's set up properly. But for the most part, he's kind of paying respect. He was saying he had a nice conversation with Dominic Cruz. He says that guy's a legend. Then he was asked about Cody. That was getting set up for him to say something. And he said he did say something towards him. But he said, no, the guy still, you got to give him respect. He's a former champ. He's a legend as well. So he's likable, you know what I mean? But it's just that at the same time, in 20 minutes, a young guy who's 15-1 is going to have some swag to him, and he's going to say some cocky things, and that's fine. All right? But I just don't understand the UFC's strategy here. Look, let's go. I'm really into this topic, if you don't mind. Conor McGregor goes. He started off with Brimage, and then he had Max Holloway. Now, we can't go back and go, Max Holloway, oh, my God. He wasn't right. Max Holloway just yet. All right, but he was still a tough out. But Marcus Brimage, Max Holloway, Diego Brandão, and then he got Dustin Poirier in his fourth fight. Dustin Poirier was something at that time. Mm-hmm. So even though a lot of people like to say, oh, they kind of guided his career, McGregor, they did, because what they did with him was they put him in a lot of fights versus stand-ups and not against wrestlers. That was basically the biggest thing. The thing against O'Malley is just like, just put him against the ring guy. We don't care who it is. We're not saying it's got to be a striker. It's got to be a wrestler. It's got to be this. It's got to be that. We're not saying that. We were saying that against McGregor. Let's see what he's like on the ground. He wasn't getting it. But he was still getting tough guys because Poirier was the fourth guy. The fifth guy was Dennis Seaver, and we were like, now you're stringing it along. But then he gets Mendez and Aldo. And really, Mendez was supposed to be Aldo. It's just that Aldo got hurt, so Mendez was for the interim. But there's your wrestler. Now, if you still want to nitpick, it's like, well, yeah, but you got the wrestler on three weeks' notice, and then you got Aldo. But then you got Aldo. You had to fight Aldo. You had to fight Aldo, and he finished him in 13 seconds. So that's an example of the UFC kind of maybe guiding somebody along the way. And I think they feel like they may have something like that with O'Malley. I'm not trying to compare him to McGregor just yet. McGregor's obviously in another stratosphere compared to anybody.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, that's a lot of fights, man. You know what I mean? Like, get him in there against a top guy. I don't know if Dana's telling Sean and Mick, don't you dare, because if he is, then he must have some other strategy. We don't know, you know, but applying it to some of the other superstars I've seen along the way, ¿Qué esperas, güey?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm going to be curious to see how Sean O'Malley responds, because if he does become win-loss guy, I don't know. He might become one of these guys like a Kevin Lee, where at some point the UFC goes, all right, we've squeezed that orange enough. It's time to move on, you know, because he's going to be commanding a high salary.
Right.
And he'll keep winning.
Yeah. And Dana White just finished saying, oh, man, we just had the best year ever. We shattered again. So it's not like they kind of need to protect anybody. Like, let's go. Whoever beats O'Malley, they'll become a big name, you know, so you can run and promote that guy, I guess. Yeah. Anyway, all right, the prelims. First, let me take a quick break here and saying I want to thank everybody that joined us for our UFC 269 watch along this past Saturday. It was a blast. We were with you guys for 9 fights. The 5 that we just went over right now, which was the main card, the pay-per-view, and also the prelims that we're going to race through right now and cover. We've gotten great feedback from listeners, from the suits over at USA Today Sports, and from others that were also a part of the watch-along. So we can't wait to do the next one, but it seems like it was a success, and a lot of it was due to you all who helped get the word out there via shares and retweets and original posts, letting everybody you know that we were doing this watch along. So thank you very much from the bottom of our hearts. But continuing on here, these were the fights on ESPN2. Josh Emmett defeated Dan Ige. Unanimous decision there. I questioned 130-27 card. I thought it was 1-1 going into the third, but I don't question that Emmett was probably the rightful winner there. Dominic Cruz defeated Pedro Munhoz. I also thought it was 1-1 here going into the third. Cruz won the third round. Actually looked pretty good at times, man, where you could tell he still has it. He should be involved in that conversation along with TJ Dillashaw and Jose Aldo as challengers for the winner of Peter Yan versus Aljamain Sterling. Tai Tuivasa just stole the show up until everything that had happened. So Pena stole the show in the end. But up until the fight to get Tuivasa, it was a fun card. I loved it. But Tuivasa's KO was vicious. Sakai was left with his leg bent back, just completely removed from consciousness. And you got Tai Tuivasa running to the cage. Some guy throws him a shoey, catches it perfectly, throws him a beer, he does a shoey. The crowd's going nuts. He probably does another 5-10 shoeys on the way back to the locker room. What an amazing performance by Tai Tuivasa.
So he's like a mixture of Mark Hunt and Roy Nelson.
Tank Abbott.
And Tank Abbott, yeah. He's so a guy cool. you gotta keep him around, man. He is so freaking entertaining. Not just in the cage, but outside the cage. I mean, to the point where the security were basically having to shove him out, you know, get him the hell out of there. But it was funny, man. I think one guy was even like dumping a beer from the top and he was just catching it. The dude's the man. I love watching that guy fight. He makes the card so much more fun. Like, he's just one of those fighters that we've said throughout a career, when you see him pop up on the schedule, you go, ooh, that's kind of like enough to put you over to want to go to the event or buy the pay-per-view. You know, Joe Lozon was a guy like that back in the day where you're like, man, I know that guy's going to give you a good fight. You know, we're in. Let's do it. Tai Tuivasa is one of those guys.
He won 3 straight to start things off. Then he lost 3 straight. And I was like, okay, well, what's going to happen here? But now he's won 4 straight. So Sakai, Hardy, I know are the last two that he's beaten. And but further to that, he's just becoming super popular because of the shoey. And he oozes charisma. You know, he's a brawler, man. He's just in that heavyweight division. You don't ask, hey, man, who's good? Like, who are the tough heavyweights? You don't ask that. You ask, who are these baddest? Who's the baddest motherfucker out of all these guys? You know, like, oh, man, it's Francis Ngannou. Oh, well, who's next? Now you're talking about the baddest men on the planet because of their size and everything and how devastating they are. And then that's the guy you definitely don't want, you know, you don't want to piss off in the room. So there's already an aura about heavyweights. But the fact that this guy just has something that where he connects with the common man, you know, he's having a beer with you out of a shoe, for crying out loud, after brawling against, you know, top-notch guys. Oh, man, like this guy – the sky's the limit for this guy if he were to continue. But there's still another level after Sakai, after Greg Hardy, that he has yet to be tested against. And almost going back to what we were saying about O'Malley, we probably need one of those names. You know, like, can you stop Curtis Blaydes' takedowns? Can you trade with Derek Lewis? Mm-hmm. Who knows? It's going to have to be one of those names along the way. Usually one guy I like to call kind of a tester is like your Blagoy Ivanov, your Ben Rothwells, whatever. I don't know. But he's going to have to catch one of these guys and test himself against them. He has before. Well, actually, he lost to Blagoy Ivanov. Excuse me. He lost to Junior Dos Santos. He has beaten Andrei Arlovsky. So I take it back. I guess he's tested himself against some of that older kind of generation. But still, I think some of these younger cats he's going to have to get. Maybe they may even throw in an Aspinall or one of the guys that's trailing him that hasn't lost, just to see if they're the real deal while keeping Tai Tuivasa in the game. And maybe, you know, maybe he's not there. Maybe Jarzinho might be a good one. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's actually a really good one. That would be fun.
Yeah, if you want to keep him against someone standing, you know. Otherwise, if you want to test him on the ground, then there's a few other names you can throw at him. But let's not take anything away. The guy's a star, and he did well, and he had a vicious KO. And moving on here, before him, we had Bruno Silva starting off our watch-along versus Jordan Wright. You know, Jordan Wright was actually taking it to Bruno Silva, and then it flipped, and Bruno Silva polished off Jordan Wright, man. Looked good. All this took place in the first round. All this took place in a minute and a half. Great way to start the watch-along.
Yeah, that was a good one. I think since then, Bruno's been calling out Tavares, I believe, right? I think that was a name that was linked to him. And that's a good fight for both guys, I think.
Yep, and he put some respect on his name. It was a call-out, respectful. But I know Brad's going to say, all right, let's do this, you know. And now Bruno's carrying a little bit more weight on his name, more respect on his name because of this KO. So good for him. Prior to these prelims, we got to enjoy Andre Muniz versus Eric Anders submission there. Muniz is the one that broke Jacare's arm. Luckily, he didn't hurt Anders like that, but he beat Anders via submission. Aaron Blanchfield dominated Miranda Maverick. Decision there. Ryan Hall defeated Derek Minner. Unanimous decision there. Tony Kelly knocked out Randy Costa pretty viciously there. Jillian Robertson submitted Priscilla Cachoeira. Unfortunately, in this fight, Priscilla Cachoeira was thumbing Jillian Robertson in the eye as her defense to a rear naked choke. Come on, man. Instead of playing 2-1, grabbing your two hands or using your two hands to grab the other hand so as not to take the choke or just creating another possible type of escape, she actually reached back and went for the eye socket 2 times. It was so gross to see. On top of the fact that she missed weight by like 3 pounds, which is kind of a lot for women's MMA. Mm-hmm. I mean, what is this gal thinking, man? She's 2-4. I think the UFC should just cut her, honestly. That we can't have that.
Yeah. I don't see another scenario where they don't. I mean, that think about – I know we see a lot of eye pokes in MMA, and fighters come back from that and fight and sometimes even win. But an eye gouge is something completely different. That's kind of like what Husamar Paharis did to Jake Shields. We were there for that. We could hear Jake screaming. I'll never forget that.
Mm.
You can't allow something like that to happen.
No. I think
you have to bounce her.
Someone who's that dirty, no, that person needs to learn. And look, if Cachoeira were to put out a statement, the sooner the better, by the way, if she's trying to save her job. But she's 2-4, folks. It's not like I'm saying, oh, what are you doing? You're cutting a contender. No, she's 2-4. She missed weight, and then she does that deal. Can't have that. If she were to put out a statement and show an admission of guilt and show some compassion for the fact that that was not a sportsman thing to do to another human being, perhaps she can get herself, I don't know if she can save herself this time, but at least exit with some class so that if you do go out and win 3 in a row, 4 in a row, 5 in a row, and you come back and you make weight, perhaps the UFC will have you back. But come on, that we can't have that. That was horrible.
That's gross.
The bonuses, as we wrap up here, they went to, there was a lot of them, so pay attention. Fight of the night, Cruz versus Munoz. Yeah, it was a good one. It wasn't a barn burner, but I didn't think it was that much better than Neil versus Ponzinibbio, to be honest, but whatever, okay? Cruz versus Munoz, they take home 50 for fight of the night. Then performance of the night went to Charles Oliveira, Juliana Pena, Kai Kara France, Sean O'Malley, Tai Tuivasa, and Bruno Silva. So that's 6 bonuses for performance of the night, along with 2 for fight of the night. That's 8. That's 4 more than they usually do. All mm-hmm. I'm saying is, if you thought Cruz and Munoz was that great, well, then why not just throw Muniz in there and give him credit for that armbar that was very slick in tapping out Eric Anders? Like, come on, you know, like, if this wasn't as epic of a fight of the night as Gaethje and Chandler, for example, that you got to give them 50, but then not give the 7th finisher of a great fight card when you gave the other 6 finishers their bonuses, right?
Yeah, I'll never understand what happens with bonuses. That was kind of odd. I mean, big props for them. That's a lot of money that they threw out that they didn't have to. But
and Robertson, yeah, too. I think Muniz and Robertson should just get theirs for their 2 submissions. Look at what Robertson had to go through, man. And she never once complained about those eye pokes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but those were pretty slick. So I would have gone 50 that route rather than Munoz and Cruz. I'm not trying to take money out of their pocket, but I'm just saying I think that's what I would have leaned towards because I didn't think, compared to other fights of the night, that this was really the fight of the night. But at the same time, the UFC's got so much money that they should just, okay, stick with Cruz and Munoz, but then give the other 2 some love. And if they're going to open up the checkbook and give them 30 grand or 40 grand, dude, is it really going to break your company to just go, nope, 50, just like the rest? Make that statement. Close out the year, right?
Right.
Anyway, all right. Look, everything else we're going to have to clean up on Thursday in terms of big news. Yeah, John Jones was piping up a little bit. So was Conor McGregor. These guys tend to do that. We call them swagger jackers. Basically, it's your night to shine, and then these guys run to Twitter. I don't know if he had something towards Amanda or what, but he said, y'all are going to be pissed off at me. So I don't know if it's because a goat got moved out of the way. I still got to unpack that one and figure out what it was, but somebody was telling me he's throwing shade at Amanda. And I saw some little quick video where he says, y'all are going to hate me more. And I'm like, what's that got to do with Amanda? I don't know that Amanda's ever seen towards John. Maybe I got it all wrong. Who knows? You know me. Sometimes I tend to butcher these things. Gaethje had a little confrontation with Oliveira, but it was respectful in the back. Michael Chandler was popping off at Dustin Poirier. All this is on Junkie's front page. McGregor was piping up at Poirier. And Nate Diaz is kind of having a go at both of them. So the dramatic part of it will kind of touch base on Thursday. But I want to get you all to go to MMA Junkie and just kind of check it out. That's what these big fights do deliver for the UFC is fight buildup, trash talk, the stuff that I guess sells pay-per-views and sells to a large majority of the audience that consumes MMA. So we got to mention it. And to be fair, I don't even hate it. Any final thoughts, guys?
No, just overall, great card. Happy to be back doing the watch-alongs, and thank you to everybody for all your support.
Faux show. All right, folks. So keep it locked on MMA Junkie throughout the week. Check out our video franchise, Spinning Backlick, and peep out those Legend of Legends that Burt Watson and Goz and Abby have put out in the past. They're great. You'll really, really like them. And, of course, the interviews that we do, a lot of them are housed over at youtube.com/MMA Junkie Video. They are the extended videos of the highlights that you see on the recaps of interviews that we do. So you'll see us do an interview. They recap it with a video highlight of 3 to 5 minutes. And now if you want the full 20-minute interview or whatever it is, go to youtube.com/MMA Junkie Video. The same place you would get the full Spinning Backlick. So I'm just telling you, the YouTube has a lot of great content there. And lastly, our social medias. I'm at MMA Junkie George. Goz is at the Goz. And the radio show is at MMA Junkie Radio. We'll see you all on Thursday. Until then, go out there and be a champion.